You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 7 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and recorded from my apartment in Bromfontein, Vaf. On the show today, Mia Kruger. We're going to be talking markets, telcos, tech stocks, and Buffett buying into energy. Rian Campbell from Citadel has been near retirement and turned from being accumulators to consumers. And Johanna Rasmus from Standard Bank One Invest on their expiring commodity ETNs. That's platinum, gold, silver, and palladium. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines. MoneyWeb, SA office property sector faces work from home threat. And from CNBC, China told citizens to buy stocks, boosting markets. Morning markets, US overnight green, S&P up 1.6%, NASDAQ up 2.2%, another all-time high. Asia mixed, Sydney's plus 0.07, and Tokyo off 0.5%. Commodities, not much happening, mostly red, platinum and gold, a little green for each of them. The Rand, 16.99, and top 40 opening call for around 0.33% in the red.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Mia Kruger. She's a director at Kruger International. Mia, appreciate your time this morning. I saw the Blue Label update yesterday. It wasn't so much Blue Label. It's CellC that interested me. It's still struggling. Telcos broadly, and we look locally, even if we look internationally, are telcos something that there's a compelling investment case as far as you're concerned at Kruger International?
Well, I think, Simon, like you said, if you look at the situation in South Africa at this stage, it's a bit of a struggling position where we're coming from. The bigger narrative around the telcos, especially what we thought about MTN way back, and even with Vodacom being the leading provider in South Africa, that there was a lot of scope due to the fact that landlines weren't that well distributed mm-hmm. through South Africa and Africa as a whole, and that would really actually give them the opportunity to capitalize on people connecting to the internet. Now, we've just unfortunately seen in all these companies so many other issues with data becoming really cheap and with so many problems with the jurisdictions that they do business in the rest of Africa, that it's actually detracted so much from the share prices that we haven't really seen these companies recover. Having said that, all these companies, even with Telkom coming out the other day with their results being up, they had a very strong growth in their mobile users rather. They had the strongest mobile segment growing in South Africa at this stage, which I found pretty interesting. And they've actually improved their margins as well. And they're now looking to capitalize on their towers by selling them off. But that we'll have to see how that goes for them to strengthen the balance sheet. But I just say that these companies have actually also all come from those lows of, I think MTN was at 30 rand and now mm-hmm. trading at about 60 rand. So it's 100% return, but they're all still down severely for the year. So where the rest of the market is now nearly at break even, I think that if you want to take a really sort of risky punt, then maybe something like MTN is something for you to look at. For me at this stage, I'm a little bit more conservative of an investor and I wouldn't be buying it, but that definitely does seem to offer value at these levels.
Yeah, me and you both, a little more conservative. I like that phrase. MTN, yeah, I agree with you. Interesting. Great market, great business, but some hard jurisdictions. You mentioned at or around all-time highs generally. NASDAQ back at all-time highs. Tech stocks absolutely flying, and that's across the range. It's not just the FANGs, the Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, or now it's Alphabet. It's Microsoft. It's DocuSign. Is Kruger International, is this a space where you've had positions? Are you still interested, or are you, scratching your head in wonderment?
Well, I am scratching my head in wonderment just in terms of how the market is really moving at this time. But we still have exposure to all these technology, or most of these technology stocks within our funds. We, like I've mentioned on the shows previously, we have trimmed back our equity exposure from January already, and mm-hmm. actually to the end of last year. But that does not mean that we don't hold any equity. We still manage an equity fund, and we still manage a global equity fund and a global balanced fund, which both still hold quality equity positions. And these are all the positions that actually make up the top positions in the portfolios, just due to the fact that they are strong businesses. They really have good prospects ahead of them. And even though their prices are quite high, there are a lot of other things going for them. And at this stage, despite the market probably coming back for a correction, you know, in the next, we don't know when, but in the next year even, these companies will still remain quality companies that we would be happy to hold in our portfolios.
Yeah, and trimming positions, to your point, it's not about exiting, it's about being prudent. It's about taking some of that amazing run and saying, thank you, we'll take that in cash for now and wait and see how it plays out. To your point, you know, a correction is guaranteed. The date is totally unknown.
Absolutely. You know, we know that no one's really good at forecasting. So being prudent and just following the basics in investments and being sort of conservative with the way you manage money is what we think is more important at this stage.
And then lastly, Warren Buffett, we were chatting Berkshire Hathaway last time. We got interrupted by technology, but you were making the point that, you know, don't discount diverse, don't discount long-term, don't discount Berkshire Hathaway. They've done a purchase buying Dominion Energy. It's a natural gas asset. $10 billion deal. That's small for Buffett. It would be big for anybody else. But it's classic Warren Buffett. When everyone's looking sort of left at tech, he quietly moves in, buys some natural gas. We've chatted before around renewable energy. Yeah, he's in the energy space, but he's going for the green side. It really does say that never discount Warren Buffett. He's never napping.
Absolutely. You know, this transaction, even though it's small within the bigger portfolio, it's actually moved up. The fact that they before this, they had about 8% of the movement of all interstate natural gas transmission in the U.S. They will now be owning 18% of that. So that's still a substantial exposure to a country like the U.S., where we know that natural gas is still one of the major providers of energy. And we think that this is a good move, and it just shows the prudent and very conservative way of moving around when managing others' money.
Yeah, to your earlier point, we can be risk averse, and I'm putting, you know, averse my words. We can be risk averse. We can still be cunning. Yeah? And Warren Buffett is absolutely proof of that. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, always appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Ian Campbell. He's an advisory partner at Citadel. A great quote from him: turn from being accumulators to consumers. He was talking around sort of investing, and particularly at that part of the life, we spend our life, we're buying, we're collecting assets, we're building wealth. But at some point, we're near retirement, and now we need to turn into that consumer as an opposed to accumulator. Rian, appreciate your time. In other words, we need to, after a lifetime of buying, we actually need to start looking at our assets and selling some of them. And I mean, that's hard for many reasons.
Yes, thanks, Simon. You know, you spend a lot, as you say, you spend a lifetime accumulating assets and then designing a strategy for income. And at some point, your income might just fall short of your requirements. Mm-hmm. And then you got to take a hard look at your overall portfolio to find assets that you can sell at a very good level. Because most of the talk in the investment world is in what can you invest in?
Yeah.
And we're focusing for this purpose. We're focusing on what can you invest out of. To generate some cash and liquidity in a portfolio.
And some of that from a pure stock perspective is easy. You look at a share price that perhaps has gone absolutely crazy. You know, Tesla springs to mind, but it's a bad example. But, you know, something that's gone crazy, perhaps a stock that you've held maybe for decades and it's now sort of overweight in your portfolio. You've probably got an attachment to it. It's made you money. You quite like it. But that's perhaps an easy one to trim some of the position to truthfully reduce some risk and free up some cash.
Of course. I think the two things you've got to look at there is overvaluation mm-hmm. and overexposure. Now, firstly, When you get an asset class or a market or a specific investment that's become overvalued and it actually screams to be sold, that's number one you're looking for. Secondly, mostly in portfolios, you'll find something that's done, as you say, done very well for a person over the long term and giving you that has given you a very, very good return and has created the wealth for you. Mm-hmm. And that's the time where you look at that overexposed position. Like if you take an example in South Africa, a lot of people could be overexposed to Naspers now after the good run. And those are the two things, obviously, to look for when you look for assets to sell, and to raise liquidity.
The one which I've always found quite easy in my personal portfolio, because I struggle. You know, selling losers, I have no problem with. It's my winners I find hard. But the other one I did find easy is sometimes you got that little straggler share. It's almost insignificant in your portfolio and it's not going to make any difference. But if you convert it into cash, that might actually help your cash flow. And those are certainly an option, and I think perhaps an easier option.
Of course, a share that, or a position that's become too small in your portfolio doesn't make a difference in the future. And then, of course, sometimes those small positions also have created tax losses, capital gains losses, capital gains tax losses, which you can actually utilize when you need to offset against other gains you've made elsewhere in your portfolio. So I think definitely if you sit around with too many small positions, it actually doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and as I said, I've had them before. Either I didn't have the courage of my conviction, or perhaps, as you say, it was actually a loss situation. And you mentioned tax, and of course tax needs to be a consideration here. If we're selling our winners, there's going to be a tax liability, but we can't do this in a vacuum. We need to chat to our tax professional and make sure that we're doing it as effectively as possible.
Yeah, sure. One of the strategies you can follow is to sell over a few tax years. If you've got a very high capital gain, unrealized capital gain, you can always spread it over, let's say, 3 years. One in the last part of the first year, then in the second year, and then the first part of the third year. And you actually don't waste too much time. You could actually do it in less than 1.5 years.
Yeah, three tax years. So sort of February year and then March. It's 14, 15 months, and you're actually into three tax years. We've been talking equity here, but of course, wealth accumulation over a lifetime is much more than just that. It'll be perhaps some lifestyle assets. It might be collectibles, coins, whatever the case may be. We need to look broadly across all of this, and I'm imagining when it's lifestyle assets, collectibles, probably makes it even harder because they're less about rands and cents. They're much more an emotional attachment.
Of course, when you look when you take a hard look at your portfolio or at your overall wealth position, you've got to look at those assets that are not really financial traded on financial markets, like your holiday home or a collector's car or whatever. And those things are normally emotional, bought for emotional reasons or for lifestyle assets. And then you got to detach yourself from those. And when you take a hard look, it's normally you got to take an objective view and say that this thing doesn't fit into my portfolio. I don't use it anymore. It doesn't generate income. And that's one of the keys. If an asset costs you money and it doesn't generate income, that's the time you should definitely consider selling.
That's a great point. You know, my Naspers, even if I'm overweight, it's going to make me some dividend payments. My lovely, you know, Roadster is not good. It's costing me money. I'm going to go back to the, you know, turn being an accumulator into being a consumer. A great quote, Rian Campbell, advisory partner at Citadel. Really appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Johan Erasmus, you find him at Standard Bank, you find him at One Invest. They're the ETF guys out there. Johan, appreciate your time. You've got a whole bunch of ETNs, exchange traded notes expiring. I suppose first we should kick off, what's an ETN and why do they expire?
Hi, Simon. So ETNs are issued off a third party or issuer's balance sheet. Mm-hmm. And then the issuer normally, let's call it promises to pay the holder of these notes the performance of the underlying assets. So in this instance, we had, or had 10 exchange-traded notes. Mm-hmm. Four of them were issued 10 years ago, referencing gold, platinum, palladium, and silver. Mm-hmm. And because they issued like debentures, they do have a maturity date. And that maturity date for the first 4 ETNs issued in the South African markets coming was maturing next month on the 10th of August. So, yeah, it's hard to believe it's 10 years ago.
It's actually wild. I actually remember when they were issued. I was still at Standard Bank. I was on the trading floor, and I actually remember the day they came to market. It is quite wild. I mean, importantly, ETFs don't, and that's because they're not the credit notes. They physically hold those underlyings. You mentioned it's gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. As I understand, OneVest has ETFs on gold, platinum, and palladium. So a shareholder of these ETNs, when they expire, can now move into an ETF without an expiry date.
Correct, Simon. The ETFs hold the actual physical underlying. So I know some people are worried about Standard Bank's credit risk, but with the ETFs, you've got no issuer credit risk. And then the pricing of an ETN and an ETF is a bit different.
Yeah.
Because the ETF holds the spot underlying, it tracks the actual spot under price of the commodity through the rand-dollar exchange rate. Because the ETNs are priced off the futures and they roll, you have to look at the future prices of what I would term the near-month most liquid contracts. And then as they roll, they do the allocation factors change as that roll increases or decreases that.
But, yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
we chatted a little while ago about the oil one and how your oil one works. No, am I correct that you don't have an ETF on silver? And is that simply because an ounce of silver is, what, $10 and so small that storage fees would be astronomical?
Yeah, Simon, we haven't got around to list an ETF on silver yet. I'm not saying it's not something we will look at, mm-hmm. but you are correct. So when you think of ETFs and having to store the commodities, you're effectively renting space in a vault. Silver is currently trading at about $18 an ounce. So you're going to rent quite a bit of space in that vault. So the fees would be a lot higher. But we'd be keen to look at it. Another thing as well is why we haven't done a silver ETF as yet is because on all our other precious metal ETFs, we've got a dispensation from the Reserve Bank that they are local assets for individuals as well as for institutional investors. And that hasn't come or that hasn't come through yet for silver. So, yeah, let's see what the future holds. But, yeah, we'd like to complete it.
Yeah, the expiring ones expire 10 August. If I am a holder, I assume what will happen is they will disappear from my share trading account. And a few days later, the cash, which will effectively be fair value, will pop into my share trading account. I imagine at least 3 days later because the JSE works on T+3.
Yes, so Simon, a couple of nuances on the 10th is a public holiday as well.
So, oh, of course.
so the expiry date is then actually moved along to the 11th. There's a last date to trade, which at that day, if you're the registered holder of the note, it gets noted against your name. Three mm-hmm. days later, that register closes. Then the underlying assets value on the 11th, and then we will pay. We'll send out a sense to the market on the afternoon of the 11th. What investors will be paid, and they will be paid or straight will be paid the next day, and then it follows the normal cycle from how long it goes through straight to the investors. But for the investors that want, there's other alternative options ahead of time as well. Of course, you can sell your holding before the expiry date and cash in and buy the ETFs. But what we're also saying is if investors want to get hold of ourselves, they're more than welcome to do so. And we'll actually assist them if they've got enough holding. We'll actually assist them to move them from the ETN into the ETFs and try.
Oh, okay. Okay, excellent. Yeah. A last question, the big question perhaps. I remember the listing of these 10 years ago. I don't remember when you listed your oil, which is obviously hugely popular. You've also got a copper, a corn, a wheat, and if I remember correctly, a Standard Bank Africa Equity Index as well, and then a commodity, I think, as well, if memory is serving me correct. Are these also, are they still out there? When do they expire? Are they coming up for an expiry?
Yeah, Simon, the Africa Equity and the Africa Commodity Index, we've both matured them beginning of the year, and okay. that was for several other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have copper, corn, oil, they're out there. They're maturing next year, but we will roll them into new ETFs. ETNs, not
yeah,
ETFs.
Yeah.
So look out for them. We'll probably before the end of the year, we'll list a new tranche and clients can roll into those. So
okay.
We won't mature them.
Okay, that's excellent, because I had a few people say to me, what happens to my oil ETN? And I said, I don't know, but I'll chat to Johan Erasmus, Standard Bank and One Invest. Johan, really appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. You'll find the podcast every morning from around 7 a.m. at moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Chat to us on social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. A massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.